Hey, what's up? I'm Sarah.
And you already know it's your boy, Ben.
And this is...
What's in the Box?
What's in there?
I think there's a movie.
There's a movie in there.
There's a movie in there.
And we're going to talk about several movies today.
Yo, Sarah, I got one question for you.
What's up?
What the hell you got planned for us on this episode, man?
Oh, this is a super special just for you episode.
Why?
I put this together especially with you in mind.
Oh, wow.
A late birthday present, perhaps.
Okay.
This is going to be hard to say. I've been practicing all week. The editing episode.
Ooh.
The editing episode. Editing episode.
The post-production process.
What's going on over there in the corner, though? What's this that is happening?
Oh,
can you please explain?
We just have a film going. There's an NTSC taxi driver laserdisc hard subbed with Japanese subtitles just chilling over there on a TV. I've been watching it all week. It's like It's like a pan and scan version of the movie, and it looks like an NTSC hellscape. Like the transfer's not that good, the color's all weird, but it is so fucking awesome to look at. And you know what they say, if your boyfriend likes Taxi Driver, girl, run.
Oh, well.
He crazy.
We were just talking about this. I don't think that's always true. I love Taxi Driver. Mm-hmm. I love Fight Club.
Oh, yeah.
I love the book Fight Club.
Yeah.
Wait, maybe there's the test. Does he love the movie Fight Club, but he's never read the book?
Mm-hmm.
If he loves the book Fight Club.
He's on the level.
Beige flag.
Yeah.
He's somewhere in between.
But if he just likes the movie, it's a red flag.
Yes. Yeah. I made a list. I've rated most of these, but I'd only reviewed like one of them.
On Letterboxd?
Yes. It's always, yeah, always Letterboxd.
Not IMDb.
No, I have no presence on there. Are you still on there? We've talked about it before.
Who knows?
Are you still on there?
Okay, yeah, I am.
You kind of creep in?
I'm a gremlin on that website. But anyways,
for
back
real?
To Letterboxd.
But I didn't know what the real criteria for good editing would be outside of the Oscars.
Okay, sure.
I don't think either of us cared about the Oscars before Brendan Fraser got
right.
nominated.
I started the Oscars So White hashtag. I was just so pissed off of all these stupid old white douchebags winning these dumbass trophies.
I did not give a shit about the Oscars until 23 when Everything Everywhere All at Once got nominated. Also, The Whale. It was just...
And it won. And the guy, like, so the guy won the award for editing, and he showed a timeline, Adobe Premiere screenshot of what his timeline looked like for the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like a tapestry, like a quilt. It was just like a beautiful. Other editors have done that before, but like, you know, looking at that movie in particular, it was just spiritual. I don't know.
Well, so what's happened? You're an editor. Wait, hold on. So now we have to go back to something I referenced.
Backtrack?
Yeah. We got a reference.
Is this a flashback?
To a previous episode of our podcast where I mentioned that I have been editing longer than you.
Oh, great. You want to get into this now, huh?
The only reason...
I would like you to start off this story with Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time. I was born in 1985.
Okay. Wrap it up.
Come on. Here's the thing. Ben is a professional editor. This is what he does for a living, correct? Yes. The only reason I've been editing longer is that I'm 4 years older than him, and I started editing in Nickelodeon Director's Lab.
And for everyone in the audience, please explain what the hell that is.
Shout out to Nickelodeon Director's Lab.
Viacom, we see you.
Yeah. We booted that shit up at your parents' house at Thanksgiving, like within the past 5 years. It holds up.
No.
It's a good, yeah, it does.
Okay, fine, it does.
It's good.
Basically, it was an art studio creator style program for kids, and it had a freaking... photo editing, there were games, you know what software on Windows 95 looked
Man.
Like. So anyway, there was this video editor component, let's say, to this, where you could import clips with a webcam, or you could use pre-existing footage that they had provided you, and you could arrange it into like 3 second blocks and render it out. And I'm pretty sure you could scream into a Microsoft microphone, like a bleeding WAV file that's peaked and everything, and drag it under the video and use some goofy music. But the biggest thing here is that you could export it, right? And we looked up how to import footage into this, and it had to be encoded in some weird proprietary format. So we gave up. But it also exports it in a similar proprietary format. Because once you've exported it, you can't go into Windows and play it back. You have to look at what you've done in Nickelodeon Director's Lab. So Sarah likes to say that she's been editing longer than I have. And the fact is that she has.
Yes, it's true.
So enjoy your life, Sarah.
Thank you. I will. Before we get into the list, which is based on like four editing Oscar shit, I want to recognize Thelma Schoonmaker.
Indeed.
She has the most nominations by far. She's tied for the most wins. She's won for Raging Bull, The Aviator, and The Departed. But she has 9 Oscar nominations.
Each one of those she was robbed of, I guarantee.
For real? Well, I know you, honestly, I know you like her that much. Because I remember one time I saw you texting someone about a girl on your phone.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, who the fuck are you talking about? And it was Thelma. You're just talking about
a woman
Thelma
that I've never met. But if I ever meet, I will have to tell her that story because it's too good. Yeah, she's a highly, highly influential editor. Definitely one of my favorites in film.
Ready for the list?
I'm ready.
The first movie is the 1980 Oscar winner for editing, Raging Bull.
A classic.
Here is your review. Simply top 10.
Yeah.
And you rated it 5 stars. At the time that I pulled this data down, I had not reviewed or rated this movie, but I corrected that. I gave it 4 stars, and yeah, I concur. That's a fantastic movie.
Yeah. I guess this is the part where we talk about it. Shut your mouth. I'm just talking about Thelma.
Yeah. Thelma Schoonmaker.
I just made up a mythical top 10, an imaginary top 10, and put it on there.
No, that's fine, because I said I concur.
If there were 10 movies, that would be one of them.
Like, my review was literally, I concur.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
However, I gave it 4 stars, so a little bit different.
Okay.
It's the start of a pattern, because you have rated all of the movies I'm going to mention that have won Oscars for editing 5 stars.
Man, I probably did that accidentally.
Yeah.
Subliminally.
I think you just like good editing.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm curious to see what the other movies are on your list that you picked out for us tonight to talk about.
But what do you think about Raging Bull? Tell me everything. Tell me something.
It is a gorgeous black and white film that stuck out like a sore thumb, or dare I say a black eye, which is what Robert De Niro portrays in this movie. And it just seems like the option to choose the black and white film that they shot, the speed at which they shot it, they were able to do some things that they could kind of cheat on. Like if they couldn't light a scene very well, or if they couldn't, if there wasn't a lot of color in the scene, it really didn't matter. You just had to get the framing right. And this is a tumultuous time in Scorsese's life. So apparently he thought that he was on his way out of Hollywood, and this was the last movie he would ever make.
Really?
He was dealing with some substance abuse, and so like this was kind of a make it or break it movie for him. And when you and it really years had to go by for it to be like within the timeline of the last 100 years, this movie brought some things with the edit of this movie to the table that were fresh, new, and exciting. And I think it's easy to see why Raging Bull is so celebrated in that one regard, at least among cinephiles, because there's flash photography, there's still images that are edited into the final cut of the movie. There's the sequences where there's boxing is like really cool to look at from an editor's perspective. The way that they have 3 still images appear back to back to back indicates like a flash photography still camera, and it's like a way of pulling the audience out of the film and almost like showing them 3 still images like they were newspaper headlines.
Yeah.
You know, along with the sound mix. And it just like, man, I mean, that movie knocks you on your ass. And the runtime, it doesn't feel like a movie that's as long as it is.
No, that's true.
By the time we're at the end and De Niro has gained 3,000
3,000
we're already like, wow, this movie's almost over. It's amazing. Like, Jesus. But the best way to watch it right now is the 4K Criterion Collection restoration that's out there. You can watch other versions of the movie, but they just restored it, and it looks ridiculous.
Well, you're always going to recommend the Criterion.
Well, they just restored it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, if Kino Lorber had restored it, I'd be like, check that one out. But, guys, do yourself a favor. If you like this movie, go and peep that.
And the only other thing I want to say is, like, apparently this movie came along at a time when boxing movies were kind of a big thing. They were capitalizing on the success of boxing movies. We had Rocky II, The Main Event, The Champ. And one I have never heard of, Matilda the Boxing Kangaroo.
Yeah, Boxing Wave.
What was up with that? Do you know anything about that?
I haven't dug down that specific subgenre of sports film
that's
yet,
fine.
But I do know that these things exist. I just, you know.
That's fine.
Will you let me borrow your copy of the kangaroo one? I need to watch that, like, tonight.
But there was, like, a boxing boom, I guess we can say, right? That time in the movies, seems like.
Yeah, which is something in the Hollywood business model that you'll see. If one boxing movie is successful, yada, 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 there's going to be 12 more of them very rapidly.
Sure. I'm going to give you a point.
Sound effect here.
Yeah, exactly. Ding, ding, ding.
Hell yeah. I got a point on the board. This episode is cool.
Yeah. All right. Next one. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you'd seen this movie until I showed it to you. The 1988 winner for Best Editing at the Academy Awards, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
You know, for somebody that hates the Oscars, you totally read that like you were on stage at the Oscars presenting it to Who Framed Roger Rabbit. No, I like
anything.
It. No.
I'm a sophist. I can say anything.
Yeah.
Do you know who the editor was?
No, I'll tell you,
but Arthur Schmidt.
A movie that 100% deserved the Overachievement Award that year in editing, which is, you know... It was up against Die Hard that year, and it was up against Willow. And while I do like both of those movies, I do think that what they did, what they were able to achieve with the tools given to them, pen, ink, celluloid, cameras, they were able to pull off some magic, right? They were able to edit in a cartoon character next to Bob Hoskins. I mean, come on, that's peak.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that's a weird bucket. Willow, Die Hard, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
What the fuck was going on in 1988? So, our ratings and reviews. You rated this movie 5 stars. You didn't put a review on there. Not part of the game. There is no game. But I do have a quick fun fact about this movie.
About Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
That's right.
Let's hear it.
Yeah. So, obviously, Christopher Lloyd plays the big bad Judge Doom. However, Tim Curry was on tap to play that part, but lost out because he was deemed too scary. I feel like he lost a few roles in like the late 80s, early 90s, because everyone thought he was too fucking scary.
That probably really came, like the casting department probably, like that was probably a tough choice for them. They were like, do we expose Frankenfurter to a new generation of Disney fans, or do we just keep it PG with Taxi, with Christopher Lloyd? Like, you know what I mean? Who's really going to be scarier here? Wise choice, because Christopher Lloyd effectively scared the shit out of me as a kid when I watched that movie. So good job.
Okay, well, here's the next movie. 1994. Winner for Best Editing, Forrest Gump.
Okay, easy.
Arthur Schmidt.
Okay.
Same person who edited Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So you fucking love this movie. How many copies of this movie do you own?
You're talking about Forrest Gump?
Yes.
Well, a few VHS. It's I think there's a Blu-ray or a 4K around here. But
how many VHS?
There's just 3, and I got them randomly. I mean, it's not like I got more copies of The Matrix on DVD than I have of Forrest Gump.
True.
But yeah, only 3. It's kind of a meme to have Forrest Gump on VHS, like a shit ton of them in your collection, because they're common as fuck.
Is it also a meme to have a shit ton of copies of True Lies on VHS? Because
no.
You also do that.
Yeah, it's just such an easy movie to buy. You pick it up and you're like, ah, that was a good summer.
Ben's rating, 5 stars, of course. And your review is American as Apple Pie and Elvis. Did you say that because Elvis like is low-key in that movie?
Probably.
You make it a little...
It just seems like such a... Like, that was the first movie where, like, America was kind of making fun of itself. Or at least Hollywood was kind of satirizing itself. And it just seemed like, you know, at some point you watch that movie as a kid. Because I think it's rated PG. It's, like, aimed at kids. There's adult stuff in there, too.
It's family-friendly, you know, for sure. Yeah.
Disney would never make that movie today. You know what I mean? They'd have to put Jessica Rabbit in, like, a trench coat or something like
that. Well, no, that's weird because Here just came out. And it's written, directed, and produced by Zemeckis and starring Tom Hanks and Robin Wright. So I just heard about this. I have no idea what it's about. They're marketing it as the people who brought you Forrest Gump. here's another serving.
Okay. Well, so if you could review Forrest Gump for us right now, live on the spot, what would you say?
It's moving and it's memeing.
At the same time.
Yeah. It's enduring.
Mm-hmm.
So like at Dragon Con this year, I did the Geek Girls run, little 3 mile run on a Saturday morning. And there was a guy dressed up as Forrest, you know, run, Forrest, run.
And it was like you were in the movie right there. You were like, oh, my God.
It lifted everyone's spirits immediately. You see a reference to that movie and you're brought back to that time when you first saw it in your childhood. Most of us, when we saw it, everything in that movie was like 30, 40 years prior to when we were born.
It's like a good little history lesson.
Yeah, it keeps carrying on. Good. Never dies.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, you're like watching that movie and you turn around and your parents are just bawling and you're just like, holy shit.
Your parents?
We don't have to go there.
We turn around and Ben is bawling, but it's just because of the music.
That's right. There's some sad music in that movie.
You cried it up too last night.
That's not making it into the episode. I'll leave the Forrest Gump shit in there because it's funny, but not the, no.
All right. The next one. Winner for best editing at the Oscars 2015, Fury Road.
Oh, yeah. Much deserved.
Fucking love this movie. Oh, my God. It's a masterpiece.
The editing, though.
Do you know who the editor was? Are you familiar with her work? Margaret Sixel.
You never know the editor.
She's like old chums with George Miller.
Yeah, they go back in the Outback days.
Yeah, so she didn't do Mad Max. She's too young for that. But she did Furiosa, Happy Feet.
No, we're talking about Babe. Like, this goes back to Babe, Pig in the City. Like, she's been working with him since
the
90s.
What the fuck? She did Babe?
Pig in the City, the sequel.
Oh. All right, well, my review is non-existent. I don't know why I've not reviewed most of these movies, but I did give it 5 stars because I love that movie. You made me watch it, same way you made me watch Die Hard, and I thank you for both.
No problem.
I have an internal battle very frequently because I believe this movie should be in my top 4.
Oh, on Letterboxd.
But I just don't know what to replace it with.
Well, give it time.
Like, everything in my top 4 is something I grew up with, I've been loving for over a decade, so it's hard to admit, like...
But this is why people who use Letterboxd do the top 4 rotating. Like, that's the hashtag, top 4 are rotating. Like, at any given moment, at any given week, at any given time, your top 4 can switch. Which is why I think it makes sense to ask what somebody's top 4 is at the moment, like on the red carpet.
Yeah.
With all these celebrities, because they don't know. They're like, the Godfather, you know? So I'm just saying, like, at any point, you could take off Buffy because you're like, okay, I need to represent for Fury Road.
Fury Road should be in my top 4 at some point soon. I have to make space for it. Here's your review. First, here's your rating. 5 stars, of course. But your review, I need some clarification. First time watching Black and Chrome edition, holy shit, fire heart emoji. I don't know what that means.
And that's the only thing I've ever said about Fury Road on Letterboxd?
It's the only thing I wrote.
It's the most
down.
Recent one? Okay, yeah. The clarification is, so George Miller, he's an old school cat, you know what I mean? He definitely remembers black and white being a little bit more cinematic, and you can do different things with it, right?
Sure.
You're the focus. He shot that movie where everything that's going on is happening in the center of the frame, so that way when the edits are happening, your eye doesn't have to look all over the screen, it just needs to stay glued to the center, which is a smart way to shoot a movie like that, an action picture, where you need to keep up with the editing to follow the action and the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, there's people that I know that maybe on some other action pictures, they just throw their hands up because their brain hurts looking at it. But your brain doesn't. It feels like it's being scratched, like a brain massage when you're watching Fury Road. You're just like, everything is happening exactly as it would happen in real life. This is great. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question about Black and Chrome edition, there's a copy of the movie on home video, which did get a theatrical release, where George Miller and the editor and the color timist, I guess they all sat down and re-timed the movie, you black and white. They were just, you know, fucking around in the lab and were like, you know what, this movie's super hard that I bet it would look great in black and white when you suck all the color out of it. And I guess Warner Brothers was like, they released it. My friend Josh went to go see it theatrically. He said it was great. I was like, I'll catch it when it hits DVD, right? And sure enough, I watched it on my new OLED TV, which handles blacks really well. I mean, black and white on an OLED TV, that's kind of like a no-brainer. That's like watching a black and white movie on a CRT. It's just trifecta at some point. All the bells and whistles are going, and they actually recolor timed every shot of the movie, and it looks like it's a different experience, right? But it's an experience for fans specifically, right? Like you wouldn't watch this over the color version. It's kind of like you might want to watch a movie on VHS back in the day, but then you would want to see it on Laserdisc widescreen. Like if you loved a movie so much, you would seek out a different edition, right? Like what if you loved a movie so much back in the day and the pan and scan on VHS was driving you fucking up a wall? So you were just like, I'm all in, and you bought a Laserdisc player and a copy of said movie, like Speed or goddamn Terminator 2. You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of thing that drives fans to make fan edits and recreate their own black and white versions of movies. And sure, studios and directors are not, they're not brand new to this idea. There's all, like, I think Logan, which is a comic book film starring Hugh Jackman, got a black and white edition, which actually is titled Logan Noir. And how fitting that the Fury Road one is called Fury Road Black and Chrome Edition, right?
But here's the thing, like, I think the colors in that movie existing in a wasteland, and there really are no colors outside of, like, you know, hues of brown, it looks really great. And then when you finally see shades of blue or green.
Yeah, it's like a breath of fresh air.
It's the whole point. That's what they've been searching for.
Mm-hmm. So visually, that's what they've been talking
about. I'm interested to see this movie in black and white. Like, I can see how it works for the tone of the movie, but weird to think of that movie without color.
Yeah, and I want to say Furiosa is getting the same treatment because they use the same, you know, crew and whatnot. So I think there's a subset of fans out there that, you know,
that want that. They're like, they're,
yeah, I think if you buy the home video bundle on disc, it's got one of the discs has it in there, just in case you want to fuck around and find out, you know, like,
well, I do,
in case you just want to be like, you know, I what am I going to do today? Watch Fury Road again. Maybe I'll watch the black and white version today.
Yeah,
yeah, that'll be great. So yeah, I mean, okay, it's that kind of thing.
All right,
that's a business model that studios will use, where you're like, wow, all of a sudden a cut of the movie is coming out very short to, you know, now that it's the black and white version, holy shit, I'm buying another ticket, right?
You've re-wet my appetite.
The there's a film called Johnny Mnemonic from the 90s. It's got Keanu Reeves in it, right? the director just recently was able to legally wrangle the film from New Line Cinema, and he put out a black and white version of it on Blu-ray. They were just like, fans want the black and white version of Johnny Mnemonic, and so that recently appeared on disc.
Fans do? The fans of the movie were like, strip out all the color.
Yeah, the home video version is just called Johnny Mnemonic in black and white. And the director, it was the director's choice. The guy who made it was just like, let me do this. And it's, yeah, you can, some people want to watch their favorite movie black and white. Now here's the thing. You could turn your TV, you could take the color all the way off of your display. Like, you could be watching film, go into the settings, but it's actually not the same.
Okay.
The color, the whole point of regrading a film for black and white is shades of gray and stuff like that. It's completely different than just sucking all the color out of the image, the video image, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Interesting. All right. Someone somewhere gets a point. All right. Next one. The first time either of us ever gave a shit about the Oscars.
Yeah. Only once.
The Academy Award for Best Editing in 2022. Everything, everywhere, all at once.
Fantastic editing. Like, wow. The VFX in this movie, wow. The pacing, wow. Again, a movie with a fourth act. And so the editing is crucial for a movie with a fourth act. The audience is like, oh my God, this movie just keeps going. At that point, when the audience says that, you can't piss them off. You got to make whatever they're sticking around for worth it. Your ending, the fourth act, worth it. And then the editing successfully pulls that off for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah. And I will say, I've only seen this movie once, which I feel like I need to give it a rewatch. I think it deserves that.
We got the 4K here.
Of course we do. It did feel long to me. It felt long, but it felt worth it. Long, but worth it. So let me give your review. Is good movie.
It's good. Yes.
Is good movie. And I gave it 4.5 stars, but I still have not given it a review. And I honestly tried to look up like some fun facts or some shit to talk about. There's too much.
Uh-huh.
There's too fucking, like, the lore around this movie is even more ridiculous than the movie itself. So I didn't even know where to start or where to begin. How much do you know about the editor, Paul Rogers?
It's his first Oscar. He worked very closely with the directors, and it was a small-knit kind of family little team that kind of put it together, friends and family.
So it's like a new shit.
Yeah, like if you could imagine a pyramid upside down, how their friend group was small, but they were all crazy.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of went in reverse and got and blew up. So they... So that movie's super epic, and the exposition was, and the humor are balanced in a way where the funnies, things are happening fast enough and leave a long enough impression with you that the exposition scenes can happen and exist. Mm-hmm. And the movie never feels like it's suffering from all the plot lines going on at one time, right? So a lot of the mm-hmm. humor is like quick, 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 bang, bang, bang. Like, we don't see the raccoon on his head for very long. You know, it's just, but you, that's the only thing you remember about that movie. You're like, wait a minute, did I just see a raccoon on some dude's head?
And the googly eyes.
Yeah, So
I still find googly eyes out and about.
So no, I don't know anything about the editor. I can't speak to the editor per se. I actually, this whole show, I've been like, wow, I don't know any of these guys personally. I guess I should get to know them. You know what I mean? I should find out what other movies they've edited. But
I don't think you're obligated to.
Usually what I'll do is when the Oscars or any kind of award season comes by where major uh-huh. films or films in general are being nominated for editing, you usually go down the list and you look at the films that have been nominated, right?
Yeah.
I very rarely follow up with sure. the editors, unless it's a film that I'm like trying to actively study every detail about it and how it came to be, just the perfect storm, you know. And so most yeah. of those, you know, my interest in editing kind of it stops to a point, you know. It's like I'm more interested in my editing career, to be frank, than everybody else's.
That's fair. Like, obviously, you know, Thelma, she's the most nominated,
prolific. I mean, I would take a class from her.
Yeah, I hope you get to one day.
You know, she's probably really fun at parties.
We should invite her to your birthday party. We got one more. And it's the only other time we gave a shit about the Oscars. Remember? I threw a party.
Yeah.
I had a themed menu.
Oh, this was coming up, right?
Yeah. And the winner for editing at the 2023 Oscars was Oppenheimer.
Yeah. An easy win for that movie. Absolutely. Light work.
Honestly.
For Jennifer Lame.
Jennifer Lame, God bless you. Because going into that movie, I was like, I don't know if I can sit through a 3-hour biopic.
I don't think anyone goes into a biopic thinking that they're like, "Why? Like, I made the wrong decision." You know?
Can we please make sure I'm on the aisle in case I gotta go pee? And you peed more than I did. I was in it. Enthralled.
I didn't mind because I knew I was gonna watch it like 5 times. I was like, if I miss this, but you know what? Actually, funny thing about the editing in that movie, you can tell when there's rising and falling action. And I want to say that right after a crucial scene where I could tell that there was going to be a lot of exposition, that's when I went to go pee. That's another good thing about knowing editing, like, by heart. You know what I mean? Because what's funny is I went to take a leak during the movie, and I came back, and we watched the film. But when I got home, the cam rip that I looked at, I watched the scene that I, like, you know, left during, and I was like, oh, pff, called it. Nothing happened in that scene. Oh, yeah, I knew it. But yeah, no, Jennifer Lame, you know, her first movie, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead in 2007, I mean, that movie's fire, but when, like, her resume is crazy. Frances Ha, De Palma documentary, Manchester by the Sea, Hereditary, Midsommar.
What the fuck?
Marriage Story, Tenet, you know what I mean? Black Panther 2, and then fucking Oppenheimer, bro. Like, she's a beast, bro. And it's like, the only thing I know about from the interviews that I've seen with her around this movie is that uh-huh. Christopher Nolan trusts that woman with his film. You know what I mean?
I guess so.
She said
rightfully
that
so.
She was like, I guess because of, let's say, Christopher Nolan's tenure and stature and his career, you know, he's not a very intimidating person, but she said, like, when she got the opportunity to work on Tenet, she was like, I have no idea if I'm going to be able to do this. And that movie goes forwards and backwards at the same time. So there's a lot of, like, numerical timing, music, you know, like, things need to kind of line up evenly.
That sounds like torture to edit.
Yeah, so Tenet was probably way harder to edit than Oppenheimer, because Oppenheimer's probably a little bit more straightforward.
Linear.
But I think if she was like, I think Christopher Nolan was like,
you can do this.
You can do this.
She did.
This movie's 3 hours on the nose, and there's a bunch of fucking dumbasses that'll sit at home and literally watch 6 episodes of TV back to back. And then the second that they find out that a movie is 3 hours, that's all the discourse is online. They're like, fuck, this movie is too long, you know? And I maybe there's something to be said about not being able to pause a movie in the cinema to go take a leak, but that's not what I came here to say. When you see a movie that's 3 hours on the nose, your brain can say, okay, that's like 3 episodes of TV. That's not bad. I'm going to plan my evening around this. I'm pretty sure we planned our evening around watching it for the first time, right?
Sure, but honestly, if it had not been edited well, I would have been pissed off.
Snoozing. Literally z.
But done so well.
This movie is we don't even have to worry about the content of the film. The fact that this movie is like, there's not a single shot that lingers on screen for longer than
nothing
like 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah.
This movie is just like bam, bam, bam. And I feel like that's subconsciously telling your brain that if you look away, you're going to miss something. But also, like, you can't, this movie's not pretentious and dragging its ass all over the floor. This movie has a lot to cover.
Yeah.
You can't cover a man's life in 3 hours, but what they did, feat of strength, in my opinion. Shout out Jennifer Lame.
Well, I will say really quickly before we wrap it up, let me go over our ratings and reviews. I gave it 4.5 stars. And here's my review. More like killing it, Murphy. Am I right?
No.
Come on.
Okay, fine. That's not bad. That was funny, Sarah.
That's not bad. To be cringe is
because that's
be
his
free.
Name, right?
Killian Murphy is his name. And I said, killing it, Murphy.
Okay. See, now that you've explained it to me, I think it's funnier. Thank you.
You gave it 5 stars. And here's your fucking review. Universal sent me a copy of the new Oppenheimer 4K, and holy shit, this is a home theater demo disc. I threw it on for some people tonight, and it's fucking Oppenheimer, man. What do you want me to say? The IMAX scenes are going to sell a lot of 4K TVs this Christmas.
Hands down.
Yeah.
And that movie didn't even get a Dolby Vision color grade. It just got an HDR 10 color grade on the 4K disc, but it doesn't matter. you know, like, and there's no Dolby Atmos mix. It's just a regular 5.1 mix, but the transfer is so filmic, and they did... probably got the best people in the business transferring the IMAX film to digital.
Yeah.
And there's like scenes that where there's grain and stuff, but that's kind of what you want. There's like, oh my God. Like it's just honestly
go see it. If you're a person out there who's
it's on
resisting, you're thinking like, oh, I don't like historical films or
yeah, like you like Oscar Stone's JFK and you like Oscar, you know what I mean, but you're like, well, I didn't like Oppenheimer.
You're wrong. It's a masterpiece. It's fantastic. And I'm gonna leave you with a quick fun fact that Matt Damon promised his wife he would not act again unless Christopher Nolan called, and call he did, and Matt Damon appeared in Oppenheimer.
Wow, that's some pillow talk that just made Hell it onto yeah. our show. That's yeah. fucking crazy.
We're citing a lot of pillow talk on this show. Hopefully we'll get some more in the future. I hope to be a connoisseur of whatever the French way to say pillow talk is. I'll look it up.
So that was a really fun episode that you put together for us tonight, Sarah. All about editing. Did we nail it? Did we talk about editing? Do you think we were able to talk about editing?
I wanted to highlight great editing, because you're an editor and I know you really respect that, and you happen to rate all these movies 5 stars, and I rated most of them close to that, so clearly we both appreciate good editing, whether or not it's intentional or explicit. So
very good.
I think good editing makes for good movies, and that's what we're here for.
So shout out to all the editors out there. The unknown editor, you know, that got the tomb in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
in the fucking graveyard.
In the back room.
The unknown editor's tomb, you know, saying go put some flowers on that dude, because you never know what these editors are out here capable of.
Thank you for joining me, Ben.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me. You guys make sure to tune in on the next episode, because I'm planning it myself. And Sarah has no idea the contents of the episode. It's going to be super duper fun. I'm a custom thumbnail artwork. You know what I'm saying? Big shit popping, little shit stopping, and I'm out of here. 5000G. Ooh, guys, I'm like,